My name is Nidhi Khosla. I'm an assistant professor at University of Missouri-Columbia. I'm presenting a short account of some issues in managing unintended consequences of interagency collaboration. This data is from the dissertation I did a couple of years ago when I was studying what collaboration means to HIV agencies in Baltimore, what are their patterns of collaboration, what affects collaboration. And I came across instances where consequences were unintended and most of these were negative. And so I thought it was important because we always talk about fostering collaboration and why collaboration is important. But we tend to shy away from talking about the unintended consequences and, you know, what we can do to prevent them. And so that's the motivation for this presentation. No relationships to disclose. So interagency collaboration means different things to different people. There are several terms that describe interagency collaboration. So for instance, somebody might use interagency coordination, somebody might call it a partnership, somebody might call it a health and human service partnership, and you know, there are different kinds of terms that are used. There are different definitions, but I think the central element to all of them is that there is shared planning and delivery of work across different organizations. And so that, in essence, is what I consider interagency collaboration, and that's the working definition I'm using. And interagency collaboration is not always completely positive. It has many benefits, but it also has drawbacks. So some of the benefits of interagency collaboration is sharing of resources. So you can share resources with other agencies, and that leads to, you know, a decrease in your own cost. More comprehensive servicing of clients' needs, because agencies typically develop expertise in a narrow range of functions, but clients, for instance, HIV-positive clients, have several needs. You know, they need psychosocial counseling, they need medication, they might need spiritual guidance, they might have legal discrimination issues, they might have special nutritional needs, they might have comorbidities with substance abuse or mental health needs. And so if you're collaborating with other agencies, it's easier for you to serve these diverse needs than it is for an agency working alone. Collaboration also needs to mutual learning. You learn from other agencies about how to reach out to clients, what works, what does not work. There are issues in receiving grant funding on time. You know, the funding flows are not always uniform, so you know how to deal with these breaks in funding. Collaboration also helps agencies to apply for grants. So a lot of grant makers now require agencies to collaborate with others as a precondition, or they might require a community-based agency, for instance, to have access to a doctor. And so if a small community-based agency can collaborate with another one that has a doctor and, you know, can say, okay, we're going to have services of this doctor for, say, 4 hours every Monday and Friday, then that increases their ability to apply for grants. And so these are some of the benefits. Costs. All collaborations are time-consuming. You have to understand the partner. You have to figure out a working relationship. It can lead to loss of decision-making control. It may not have immediate benefits. So you might be collaborating and learning from each other, but not see any benefits on the client end. And it may cost more in the short term because you are setting up systems and procedures to work through this. And it may even cost more in the long term than if you were to do things alone. So if you were a large HIV agency and you have a lot of in-house services, it might actually be cheaper for you to do stuff on your own, even in the long term. But the idea is that we collaborate so that other agencies can benefit and clients can benefit. Just a little bit of background about HIV agencies in Baltimore. Baltimore is always among the top 5 or 6 HIV-affected regions in the United States. There's a rich literature on biomedical and behavioral risk factors that put people at risk to HIV, but there is much little work that has been done on aspects like interagency collaboration or other factors that affect organizational behavior. So there was a study done by Quaid et al., published in 2001. They used data from 1996 on agencies that were receiving HIV Ryan-White funding at that time, and so they looked at a network analysis of the connections between those agencies. More recently, Cunningham et al. Had looked at churches that have HIV ministries or other outreach work in Baltimore, and what are the factors that affect their working with other public health agencies or among themselves. And improving collaboration among HIV agencies has often been reiterated by the city as one of their goals. And so this is sort of the background and motivation for the study. We have several agencies that work on HIV issues in Baltimore, and they range from large clinics run by Johns Hopkins and University of Maryland to more smaller community-based agencies. So it's very interesting to see, you know, how do these agencies that have a different style of working, a different philosophy, a different set of services they offer, like how do they come together to collaborate. So this data was collected in this time period, September 2010 to March 2011. There were two agencies that responded later, so the star denotes that. It's a purposive sample comprising 21 agencies. With one agency, I did 3 interviews, so it's a total of 23 semi-structured interviews. I used Atlas TI to organize the data. And this was done by a single coder. Transcripts were read repeatedly, and I organized the results by the teams. So here are the results. So in addition to positive consequences, agencies experienced unwelcome consequences as well. So the first one pertains to boundary setting. So for example, a social work staff was talking about the tensions she faced when she was working with a peer-led intervention, because in her style of working, or her agency style of working, the boundaries between clients and the staff were much more stricter than the loose boundaries that peer-led interventions maintain. And so here's a quote from her. I've certainly had experiences with lots of other community agencies where you think, where is the boundary here? Taking clients home, taking them to your own home, driving them in your own personal vehicle, that's not something I would do as a licensed social worker, because to me, that's crossing that professional boundary. But there are other people who have not been trained that way and taught that way, and they see nothing wrong with that. And so this is an instance of issues with boundary setting. Loss of decision-making control. So I had this one agency that were talking about its partnership that was more a dictatorship, and she ended it. So she said, yes, it was a dictatorship. It was never brought together as a group to ask for ideas. It was always, this is what you will do, and if you don't do it, we're going to put you out. Well, put me out, because I'm not going to sit here like a child and be dictated to. So that's what I did. I just got out. So this is one example where, you know, they just decided to manage the unintended consequence by just leaving the partnership. Sacrificing own self-interest, that can also happen. So this is an instance of an agency that was short-staffed but was obligated to share its staff with another agency because they had signed an agreement that had not been carefully framed. And so this is an example where, let's say, if an agency has a registered dietitian and they are in huge demand for HIV clients, and other agencies don't have it, so they would loan out their person and say, okay, you know, our person is going to work with you or serve your clients, let's say, twice a week for 2 hours. And so this was such an example where somebody actually did not read the fine print in the MOU, and they ended up with fewer dietitians themselves, but had to send people to other agencies while, you know, they were short-staffed themselves. And so the MOU means memorandum of understanding, but since we did this MOU, a few people that didn't read it well, so she's talking about her own staff, it obligated us to that for a year. Damage to reputation. So an agency's reputation was affected because it was working with another one that was doing irregularities, and it could not pull out the agreement immediately for the sake of vulnerable clients. So when you're working with clients that are HIV positive, that might be homeless and have, you know, other comorbidities, you might have a collaboration that's not working well, and you know it, but you can't immediately pull out because then, you know, you lose the clients, and the clients suffer. And so this person was saying, we weren't accused of doing anything, and in fact, it was clear that we had done everything, but one of the things we have in the community is a really good reputation for integrity, and just even being aligned, so it just means being aligned with this other partner, and that happened, was we ended up coming out fine, but it was very stressful. So just a brief slide on implications. How are we doing with time?
8 minutes.
Okay. So I think I'm going to actually finish before time. So some of the implications that come out from this data are about partner selection. So agencies should assess potential collaborators more closely before establishing partnerships. And I think there is just such a lot of pressure with the grant cycles that often it's attractive to find a partner than really investigate if your goals are in line with the partner's goals and if you would be positive, productive relationships. So I would say more attention to be paid to partner selection. Then nurturing existing partnerships. Another strategy is to just focus more on the relationships you have and reduce the likelihood of negative experiences by collaborating only with known partners. And that's something some agencies have started doing, which when they have a set of partners that they worked with before, and that at least ensures their collaborations go the way they were intended. Goal clarification, I think this is most important, that you can reduce the likelihood of negative consequences by clearly identifying the objectives and shared responsibilities ahead of time. So in summary, I would say inter-agency collaboration has several benefits and drawbacks. Agencies do need to focus a lot more on partner selection and goal clarification so that they can ensure the partnerships they get into are more productive and less stressful. So thank you.